trying to have his intro, and you always press A to move on to the next thing, or X.
Yeah, it never goes more than probably 0.5 seconds for that guy.
It would be like, we'll go down to David Aldridge for the report. Hi, David. Yeah. Oh, well, thank you, David.
Yeah, back to you.
No, back
Welcome back to the Intentionally Failed Podcast, where nothing in sports is off limits and everything is out of bounds. Don't forget to rate us and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. How are we doing today, Jacob?
Doing well, man. Glad to be here doing the podcast, you know, best day of the week.
Yeah, I totally agree. A lot of good NBA, NHL games wrapping up right now. MLB is still going on, but pretty entertaining games going.
Yep. I'm very intrigued to see how all the playoffs and everything like that end up. So.
Yeah, the East has been pretty boring, if you ask me.
Yeah, I bet it's gonna ramp up a lot more.
Yeah, it's probably gonna be the worst first round in history, but the greatest second round in history.
Yeah, there's a lot of good matchups. Hopefully we get to see the Bucks face the Heat.
Yeah, I want to see Tyler Hero go off for 30 plus first game.
Possibly.
Yeah, so today we have a few different topics to talk about. First being the Mount Rushmore of sports. Next is going to be the biggest upsets in sports history. And finally, the best and worst commentators in sports.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we got a lot to talk about there. Mount Rushmore for sports. What do you got?
For this one, we're going to make this a series. So let's do basketball first.
Okay, I like
for
that.
For this episode, and then we'll go and pick what sport we want to do next.
All right,
for basketball, four players I have. Mount Rushmore. I'm sure we have three out of the four almost the exact same.
Let's see.
Okay. Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, and my final pick is Kareem.
Damn. That is pretty close. I'd say that pretty much three out of the four there. I'm going to go with Michael Jordan, of course, LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, and sleeper pick, Tim Duncan.
Oh, okay.
And the only reason I picked Tim Duncan is because I feel like his boring style of basketball play doesn't get him enough hype.
Okay.
Whereas with Kobe, it's all flashy. And, yeah, you know, same with MJ. But with LeBron, I heard a lot of criticism coming out of high school with him was he plays too boring, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he doesn't... He plays very fundamental basketball, just like Tim Duncan.
Yeah. He definitely has become flashier over time.
Yeah, nowadays you like can't take your eyes off the guy playing basketball. Yeah. But I feel like the textbook example of a player to watch is going to be MJ.
Mm-hmm.
It always has been.
That's true. I mean, it's pretty crazy to watch the Lakers play the Trailblazers the other night with the Mamba Day and wearing the black jerseys and everything like that. Like, it's pretty crazy. Like, what did Kobe mean to you?
Yeah, man. I'd have to say the whole Kobe Mamba mentality, dedication to your game, that can really go a long way in whatever aspect of life. It could be your job, it could be school, it could be a sport you currently play, it could be a relationship, but
yeah.
It's only going to propel you further if you adopt that mindset, because I've never seen someone more cocky, not even cocky, that's just kind of an insult, but more confident than Kobe Bryant was.
Yeah, it was truly, literally growing up, it was like, that's who you wanted to be. You wanted to be someone who had that killer instinct on the court, like no matter what, always trying to get better. And like Kobe was like the perfect role model, like besides like, as a kid, we didn't really know about like the stuff that happened in Colorado, because like we were too young, I feel like.
Yeah.
But like, as we got older and just watching him win titles, like when he went 24 and everything like that, like that's just something that was so, like you just like gravitated to it because it was such like a great feeling to watch him play and win and shit.
Yeah, and I mean, as a Celtics fan, even when he won his fifth and final title, I couldn't even be mad because of how well he played overall that series.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really do wish that I remembered more of his three-peat with Shaq. I think I was just a little too young for that one to really have some vivid memories. The Colorado thing, of course, I was too young for that too to really understand it. But that all got dropped anyway. What I really do remember very vividly after that fifth and final championship was that one Lakers season that was a total dumpster fire where they had Dwight and Nash and everyone thought they were going to win his, you know, win him the sixth ring.
Yeah.
And they barely made the playoffs because horrible team chemistry, whatnot. But Kobe tore his Achilles playing so many minutes a game every night, just trying to get him in the playoffs and making those free throws on torn Achilles was pretty insane. I'm never going to forget that because I was like, this guy's serious. Like,
yeah. And I mean, shit, he was like the youngest to ever win a dunk contest, youngest to ever start in an all-star game. Like, and then he's one of a small group of people that have lasted longer than 20 years.
Yeah. With the whole loyalty thing too, that's a very small sample size.
Yeah.
I feel like, I mean, in recent history, it's really just Kobe, Dirk, and Duncan.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's true. Vince Carter like jumped around more like towards the end of his career, but like he was with the Raptors for the longest time and the Nets too.
Yeah, yeah. And with Kobe staying on the same team and Duncan and Dirk as well, it's people kind of really hope that their favorite star player on their team is going to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
When I feel like it's in reality pretty rare for a player to just stick around because loyalty in basketball is more, it's fading away. But the last player to really have that loyalty, or last players, I should say, are the three previously mentioned ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. It's pretty crazy. Like, I don't know. It's just hard to think about like what would be going on right now if like Kobe didn't like pass away. You know?
Yeah, he'd probably have some interesting shit to say about this bubble.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, he kind of seemed like the NBA Yoda
at
the end of his career, and I remember he was helping Jason Tatum out a lot. Because he reminds me of Kobe watching him play. Not gonna lie, he did some game examinations of Tatum, kind of helped him out on film and whatnot. And I think it was only making him better. And I don't think Tatum would be as good as he currently is if it weren't for that help.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. All right, I want to go into the coaches, Mount Rushmore of basketball. All
right.
Here are my four picks: Red Auerbach, Phil Jackson, Pat Riley, and UConn legend Gino Auriemma.
Okay, I have literally all the same picks as you, except the UConn coach. Instead of him, I have Greg Popovich.
Okay, that's pretty solid too. I was just thinking, like, you know, no one's. I feel like no one besides like Pat Summitt. Like, no one besides Pat Summitt and Gino Auriemma. Like, when you think of college women's basketball, you think of those two.
Yeah, it's pretty legendary records that they were able to pull off. I don't think we're going to see that for a very long time, honestly.
Yeah, especially Gino's, like, it's pretty crazy what he's accomplished at UConn.
Yeah. Yeah, the UConn team is... I've never seen something get so predictable, you know? Like, I don't know, I'm not like trying to discredit them for saying that because they're really good, but if you can make a sport like that, like kind of say, okay, they're definitely going to make a deep run this year just because you know they're going to be good, then that says a lot about your program and your team, players, coach.
He's produced a lot of legends too. You got like Maya Moore. I'm pretty sure that Sue Bird went to UConn. Those are just a few of the names. Like, those guys are legends, like on and off the court. And like, Gino keeps doing his thing. Like, there's no doubt about it. I'm pretty sure he's already in the NBA, like the Basketball Hall of Fame. He's not even done.
Yeah, 100%. I'd say so. With Pat Riley, that was a great pick because, all right, so, well, his biggest years obviously come from Lakers and then the Heat and the Knicks. And could you think of, like, three bigger markets to coach?
No, honestly? Those are, like, Those are like the biggest, probably, like legendarily, those are definitely the biggest ones.
Yeah, so this guy basically took every big market franchise, or the biggest market franchises in the NBA, and gave them good runs, some titles.
Yeah.
Great legends, you know, being coached in the process there. And I feel like that gets more slept on because of the Phil Jackson, you know, 11 rings that happened. Because, I mean, Phil won more rings after Pat Riley retired. So that kind of got like a little overshadowed. But then Popovich, he just kept winning too.
Yeah.
You know, he had a title in 2007 after Pat Riley's final one. And then he had that 2014 title with the Spurs. And people were like, oh shit, this guy's the real deal too.
Yeah. I saw, I don't know if you saw this, but the 76ers got rid of Brett Brown the other day.
Yeah.
And Popovich was, is like one of their targets that they want to try to get.
Yeah, I saw the Nets were trying to get Popovich too. And I said, KD, how much help do you need, buddy?
Oh yeah. Dude, I swear, Pop would never like leave the Spurs, I swear.
I don't think he's going to do that. I mean, he's been with the staff for so long. First head coaching job in like 96, 97. And I think he was an assistant before that. So before we were even alive, he's been with the organization.
Yeah.
One thing I did yesterday watching that Heat game, I looked up Eric Spoelstra and I saw he was an assistant coach with the Heat since 1997 until 2006. So I think that's basically just like the reincarnation. I mean, obviously he doesn't have much titles as Popovich, but it's kind of the same shit. Like, I don't see Spoelstra leaving the Heat, and I don't see Pop leaving the Spurs.
Yeah, it's like there are like coaches like that for like franchises, like Bill Belichick, you know? Like, he's, yeah, did he was like with the Browns, right?
Yeah.
But then he also has been with the Patriots for over 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah, and I get that too. I mean, like, once you join somewhere, you're, and then you have like an extended run, it's pretty unlikely that you leave. But yeah, I don't know. We're just going to have to see what happens this offseason. I don't want to see Kevin Durant get any more help than he already has.
Yeah, especially with the healthy Kyrie, with Chris LeVert and KD, I feel like there might be pretty solid.
Yeah, yeah. They're going to be a team to watch. Do you know if Dinwiddie's coming back or not? Because last I heard, he was doing a GoFundMe for
it. Oh, yeah. I think he is coming back because I'm pretty sure he has a year or two left on his contract. So, like, the fact that he wanted to do a GoFundMe, like, hey, who's going to be my next team? It's the weirdest shit I've ever seen.
Yeah, picking an NBA player's team in their prime is pretty banger bust, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was the other coach you had?
Red Auerbach.
Oh, Red. Yeah. Okay. That one's interesting because when Red was coaching, you had very limited teams, you know, and I think that kind of makes the league a little more competitive to an extent, having the select competition, because like you're really only getting the best players. You know, it's like every playoff is going to be more evenly matched, because in a wider league of like 30 or so teams, you're going to get a really wide range of shit and great teams going on. But back then, I feel like a lot of teams were more evenly matched. So you're kind of like, it's kind of like hit or miss if you're going to actually go through and win that title. But I mean, 9 rings, he did it.
Yeah, dude, he's a legend. He like started in like so many offensive schemes and stuff. And then like, you also got to think like, probably the best assistant coach, or necessarily like a consultant, I would say, is like Tex Ryder.
Oh, yeah.
For like, he is the one that started the whole triangle offense.
Right. I mean, with Red, it's kind of like he made his own shit up. And then with Phil, he adopted Tex's scheme from Kansas State and then perfected it. So with Red, it's just kind of like I give him a little more credit in that aspect, but I still give Phil his props. I mean, Phil, people want to call Phil Jackson lucky because he had MJ and Kobe to coach. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, how many rings did those guys have without Phil Jackson?
Yeah, like, that's true.
Zero.
I mean, without like a good coach, the players can only do so much. Like, think about like this, like LeBron with the Cavs, right? Like, they only won, what, one title in 3 years or something like that?
Yeah.
Because they had Ty Lue.
I mean, I'll put it this way, dude. Every single coach that LeBron James has worked with, they've made their first and only finals appearance with him.
Yeah.
And they haven't done jack shit otherwise. I think we might see something with Spoelstra because I do think he's a great coach. Other than that, I think that's really the only great coach LeBron has had to work with. But other than that, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, 100% agree with that.
So that'll wrap it up for Mount Rushmore. We got to move on to our biggest upsets in sports history. This is going to be a good one.
Yeah, I mean, we can't not talk about the 1980 Miracle on Ice game. U.S. versus Soviet Union, probably the biggest upset of all time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean... I feel like even before Miracle came out, the people who saw it all happen, they thought it was some legendary shit. But I'm glad that movie was made because I feel like our generation seeing that, we're probably like, whoa, that actually happened in real life.
Yeah. You know? That movie and the monologue Kurt Russell gives is probably one of the best speeches that I've ever seen in a sports movie.
Yeah, they really hit the nail on the head with that one. Shit, I might need to go watch it later, honestly. But, yeah, the Miracle on Ice. Fun fact, I don't even think I told you this, but there was a kid who went to my high school on the hockey team. His name is Danny Ruzioni, and he was Mike Ruzioni's kid from that team. And I was like, I just pieced it together, like, at the very end of it. Huh. And I was like, no wonder you're so good at hockey.
Yeah, his dad's a fucking legend.
Yeah. Biggest upsets. Yeah, I'm going to have to go with, this one's going to be rough for any Dallas sports fans, but it's going to be the Mavericks being upset by the Golden State Warriors, led by Baron Davis.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. some people might say that this was super predictable because they went 3-0 against them in the regular season, or they didn't lose to them in the regular season, so they said, all right, yeah, whatever. This is that was just a fluke. We're going to win this shit out. Nope. The Mavericks had 60-plus wins that year. Dirk, I think, was MVP, and they just completely fell apart.
Yeah, dude. I'm pretty sure who was the other guy that was on the Warriors at the time?
Oh, dude, it was Steven Jackson.
No, the guy who did, Jason Richardson.
Oh, yeah, that's who it was.
Yeah.
Really, like... really good above average players, like a bunch of really good guys like that, just kind of took out this crazy Mavericks team. And I think if I was Dirk, I don't know what I would do if I lost to them in that series. It takes a lot to bounce back from that. And I think it's going to kind of stain his legacy, that little series right there. I mean, people always like want to bring up Dirk's accomplishments, and they're great, but there's always going to be that one guy who brings up that Warriors series.
Yeah. I mean, that brings me to another one in my head. The Mavericks beating the Heat in the 2013 finals or something like that? 2014 finals.
This was the LeBron... the series where LeBron scored 8 points in a game.
Oh, I think it was 2012.
I think it was 2011.
Okay.
2011, yeah. Yeah, the 2011 finals were a really bad performance by the Heat. Like, I remember that LeBron and Wade had, like, I mean, obviously they weren't, like, fighting with each other, but the way I was watching it, I was thinking, okay, they can't decide who wants to be the guy on this team, right? Because this was D. Wade's franchise. LeBron was being, like, pretty passive the whole series and kind of wanted to dish it off to Wade. And, I mean, Wade would put it away, but LeBron was definitely not aggressive enough. And, I mean, Rick Carlisle out-coached Spoelstra that whole series. Like, it was pretty bad. And I still can't believe that happened. But even then, I feel like people try to kind of discredit LeBron so much for that performance that they want to call that job like a choke, you know, but
yeah.
You can really view it both ways, because before that, the Lakers and Mavericks and the Thunder and Mavericks series were not even close.
Yeah.
So they were just kind of running through the whole playoffs. But just because the Heat had that super team that first year, you know, everyone thought it was going to get done.
Mm-hmm. 100% agree with that. Thinking about NBA Finals, we also have to talk about the Detroit Pistons beating the Lakers in five in 2004 with a stacked Lakers team, which include like Kobe, Shaq, Gary Payton, and Karl Malone.
Yeah, that was a ring chase for Malone for sure. That actually reminds me a lot of that Heat Finals because Kobe and Shaq couldn't decide who wanted to be the guy. Kobe was really coming into his own. Shaq was kind of fading away from his prime, and they were just like not getting along. They just didn't know like who wanted to get the most usage.
Yeah.
And I mean, you had Phil Jackson coaching for that too, and even he couldn't fix that shit.
Yeah. That's probably one of like the biggest questions, like the what ifs, you know, like what if Kobe and Shaq like didn't break up, you know?
Yeah, it'd be interesting, but those guys, like, in their personalities, couldn't have worked out.
Yeah,
I mean, there are only a select number of teams in recent history that really remind me of that Pistons team. It's them, and then like the 2014 Spurs, and then this year, what really reminds me of that team is the Raptors. Mm. Where there's no like superstar, like leading a team.
Yeah,
and just really good teamwork.
The only person that I think has superstar potential is Fred VanVleet. Like, he's the only one that, like, is constantly showing up.
He blows up every playoffs, and it doesn't make any sense. But I remember that Bucks series last year, he was shooting, like, 82% from three.
Jesus. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. And it was probably because he had a kid last year in the playoffs. Now it's Mike Conley having a kid. And for some reason, every time these NBA players have kids, they just play really well.
Dude, they got to show out for the kid. Make a good example.
They gotta. You got any other ones?
Yeah, I have a few. Fiesta Bowl, Boise State, Oklahoma. They go into overtime. Boise State does the Statue of Liberty play. They go on to win. Like, Oklahoma was like 7.5-point favorites going into that game. Boise State, after that game, they started becoming a household name.
Right. Sometimes all it takes is like one really good televised win.
Yeah. Then I would also say, sorry, Cam, I know you're a Michigan fan, but
I was going to bring this one up.
Appalachian State defeating Michigan. Like, they didn't even, like, the Vegas betting books didn't even have, like, a line for this because they're like, oh, Michigan's going to fucking run away with this shit. But they fucking beat Michigan. First time that an FCS team beat an FBS team.
Yeah, I remember the day that this happened, dude. I remember my dad was listening to this game on the radio and he was like, what is going on? I think Lloyd Carr was still the Michigan coach. Great guy. He brought him a title already in 97. And after that season, he was like, can't fucking do it anymore, man.
Yeah.
So that loss kind of broke up the program for a little bit because it was a slow rebuild with Rich Rodriguez after Lloyd Carr left. But it really all started with that Appalachian State bullshit.
Yeah, it was just supposed to be just a little tune-up game, and that's it. But then they go ahead and they beat a ranked FBS team. Fucking crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't even know if I'm going to see anything like that again. But that one was really bad. As far as other upsets go, well, I'd say I've brought this one up before, but the Eagles, Patriots, Nick Foles, Super Bowl. Okay, no one expected the Eagles to actually pull that shit off.
Yeah.
And you could say that it makes total sense because of how well they were playing up to that point for the Eagles and Malcolm Butler being taken out for that game because he was on some bullshit the night before or whatever. But everyone I was talking to before that game, I don't think anyone picked the Eagles to pull it off.
Yeah. I mean, going at the Patriots again, I think the Giants beating them in the Super Bowl is also a huge upset.
Yeah, because the Giants came in as a wild card.
Yeah.
And then you have a 16-0 team on the other hand. And, I mean, they only scored 17 points that entire Super Bowl. And it's like, it's kind of weird because the whole season they were putting up crazy numbers, with especially when you got Moss to throw to you, bro. Like, how do you only put up that many points? I think that was one of Brady's worst games when he needed to show up the most. I'll be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Dead honest. yeah, other than that, I can't think of any more big notable ones.
I have a few NCAA March Madness tournament ones.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. These are good. These are good.
So 2011, VCU beat the Jayhawks, Kansas Jayhawks, in the Elite Eight. Then in 2014, Mercer beats Duke in the first round. And then in 2018, 16 seed UMBC, the Rottweilers or some dog, I think it's the Retrievers, they beat the number one seed Virginia, first time I believe that's ever happened, ending a 0-135 run for 16 seeds.
Dude, I remember the Mercer Duke game. I literally was fucking around on my bracket, and I actually picked Mercer to win that shit.
Actually,
and I flew way ahead of the competition for that little period of time when that upset occurred. But yeah, that one was really bad. The Virginia upset, that one was so bad that people counted them out entirely for the upcoming year.
Yeah,
and then they won the whole thing. That's the crazy part. Like, how can you bounce back from that and win the entire tournament?
I don't know. I mean, shit, for that game, the UMBC were 20.5 point underdogs. They ended up beating Virginia by 20 points. That's crazy.
The fact that it was a blowout, too. Bro, whoever was running their Twitter account during that time was straight up savage.
Yeah.
Literally posting the most crazy tweets. And did they even win a game after that one?
How deep was the run? I don't think so. Like, that kind of reminds me, UC Loyola, wasn't that in the same tournament where, like, they had the older lady and, like, they went, like, pretty far, like the Elite Eight at least.
Yeah, they had a little Davidson type run.
Yeah.
During that time, I think they might have made it to the Final Four. Like Loyola, no one really even knew what they were about. But I mean, when March Madness comes around, anything can really happen. Sometimes players just step up to the spotlight, playing on TV in front of all those people, and then some just fall apart. I think that's the difference maker. Because so many people are watching the games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, regular season, and that's fun enough as is. But, dude, I mean, everyone's doing a March Madness bracket, and everyone's tuning in to see how well their picks are. Mm-hmm. And the further it gets, the more eyes you got on you. And I think the pressure really gets to them.
Yeah, especially if you're in, like, a smaller school.
Yeah.
That's why, like, most of the time, a bigger school wins the whole thing.
Yeah, so that's why I give Loyola credit, because they kind of looked at it as like we're underdogs, and because we have so many eyes on us, we want to play really well.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of show that we're still a legitimate team here. And normally, I feel like if you're a small school, you just be like, oh shit, they're going to count us out and it's going to get to you. But nope,
they showed up. I have two more baseball ones.
All right.
2014 ALCS, the Yankees versus the Red Sox. Yankees go up 3-0. Somehow, the Red Sox come back. They win that entire series. Big Poppy goes fucking off. Crazy.
Yeah. I mean, everyone wants to talk about the Warriors blowing a 3-1 lead. Let's talk about blowing a 3-0 lead.
Yeah, that's like literally, it's fucking right there on the platter. And the Red Sox were like, nope, that's mine.
Yeah, that's insane. I still can't believe that shit happened, honestly. But unfortunately, because it's baseball, which gets less viewership, I feel like, than more, like football or basketball, people aren't going to bring up the whole 3-0 lead being blown as much. But yeah, Big Poppy really kind of made his case there. It was the series that was just kind of like... I think that really ended all Red Sox Yankees arguments for the modern day.
Yeah,
I really do, because that's a horrible choke job. Yeah, if you ask me.
I mean, that's still probably one of the best rivalries we've ever had, like in sports.
Yeah, it's probably one of the first that comes to mind if you just say sports rivalries. You're gonna think of that one right off.
It's up with that one and Ohio State and Michigan.
Yeah, It's nuts.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
And then
you can't forget about the Packers and the Vikings, dude.
Oh, yeah. But mostly, I feel like with that one, I feel like the Packers and the Bears have a bigger rivalry. Like,
yeah.
First, because they've been together. Like, they've been in the league for over 100 years. And so, like, I feel like the Bears think that they have a better rivalry with the Packers. But the Vikings and Packers, like, because the Packers are literally right in the middle of Illinois and Minnesota. So, like, they have rivalries with both teams.
Yeah. Like. And then Detroit's just kind of over there, like, twiddling their thumbs.
Yeah, like always.
Yeah. But this year, nobody cares about the Bears.
Yeah. Fuck the Bears. And then 2019, Nationals beat the fucking Astros. Fuck you, Astros. And first time in baseball history that the road team won every game of a 7-game series, and the Nationals lost all their home games.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting when a team that was known for cheating loses all their home games. But I don't think the Astros were actually doing as much fuck shit that year,
yeah.
Or at least that we know of. But I remember when that was going on, I was like, how are they playing so well? I mean, they just lost Bryce Harper right before that.
I know. That was like the weirdest thing. It was so ironic that like they lost arguably one of their best players and then they turn around the next year and they win it.
Yeah.
It had to be because of Max Scherzer. Like their pitching was fucking crazy that year.
Yeah. That pitching was kind of insane. I mean, all those Astros players, they were still like riding off of the previous championship. They had that championship 2017. The next year they had to go up against the Sox, and that was just a stacked Sox team, and they were still like, okay, we got some fight in us for the for the next year. They showed up, they made it back to the World Series, and they really did play their best, I feel like. And in baseball, it just kind of shows like upsets like that are possible. They really are, no matter how many great players you have on the opposing team. Like, never count them out, because that could always happen, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Especially on the World Series.
Come hashtag prop up on Thrive Fantasy this season. Thrive Fantasy is a daily fantasy sports app for player props. We've downloaded it on our phones, and it's probably one of the smoothest fantasy sports apps we've ever used.
They have eliminated the need to do countless hours of research because they only ask you about the top-tier athletes in a respective sport.
For the NFL, you choose 10 out of the 20 player prop options to build your lineup.
In NBA, MLB, PGA, or esports, choose 5 out of the 10 player prop options to build your lineup.
Each prop has a fantasy point total associated with the over or under based on its likelihood to occur.
The more points a selection is worth, the riskier it is.
Rack up the most points to win a share of the prize pool.
For PGA, Thrive has new contests each day of the tournaments, so don't sweat your golfers ruining your weekend by not making the cut.
Even better, you can win a lot of money. Thrive has awarded over $1.3 million in prizes since launching in 2018.
Use promo code FOUL20 when you sign up today, and you'll receive an instant $20 bonus on your first deposit of $20 or more.
Download Thrive Fantasy on the App Store or Play Store by visiting their website at www.thrivefantasy.com.
Or hit the link in our description.
Sign up and hashtag prop up today.
But yeah, next up, we have our commentators.
Oh man, best and worst commentators. I'm fucking ready for this shit, dude.
Yeah.
Let's roast some motherfuckers.
So, best commentator for me is going to be Mike Breen.
Okay.
Because the bang call is legendary, bro.
That's our outro, man. It's like the most legendary thing you can think of.
Yeah, and some of the greatest plays in basketball history have the bang call. Like the Ray Allen 3. Like, you can memorize the play calling because of how good it is. I mean, as great as the play is, like, okay. For example, I'm gonna remember this. James with a 3. Won't go. Rebound Bosch. Bosch out to Allen. His 3-pointer. Bang!
Yeah.
Like,
that's like one of those things that you'll never forget, you know, like the Pledge of Allegiance or some shit.
Yeah, yeah. It just kind of sticks with you. And we even saw the other night with the Luka game winner. He said bang on that one.
Yeah. I saw that on social media the other day.
Yeah. Worst commentators. Okay, I'm gonna give this one to Joe Buck because
thank God
there are some really great plays that happen, and he could not sound more he couldn't sound any less excited to watch some crazy shit going on. I'm like, dude, come on, like, just get into it.
Yeah. You know? The only good call that Joe Buck has had was the Minneapolis Miracle.
Yeah. Yeah.
When he like lost his voice. That's the only good call. Cause I hate with a passion Joe Buck and the Troy Aikman combo. Like, Joe Buck is such a dick sucker. Like, he especially against like any good quarterback, like, doesn't give shit for anybody on the Vikings, at least from a Vikings standpoint. For me, he is the worst fucking commentator ever.
Bro, is it me or like whenever I see Troy Aikman, I just think this man hates his life. Like, whenever I see him on TV,
because he has to fucking work with Joe Buck.
Yeah, it's really bad. It's really bad. But back to best commentators, I'm gonna go with Dick Vitale.
Okay, that's one of mine.
Because the voice is so iconic, bro.
Yeah, dude, and like his speeding voice, like when he gets really excited, like, yeah, baby! Like,
yeah, that's just a staple of his, too. Hearing him commentate over college basketball is some entertaining shit.
Yeah.
I almost don't even feel like watching the game. I feel like just kind of like putting headphones on and listening to
just by himself.
Yeah.
Okay, I got fucking one. Let's hear this. Doris Burke. I mean, she is the hottest commentator.
How many beers, fellas?
Dude, she...
Zero.
She is the coolest fucking commentator that ESPN has, like, in their realm.
Yeah, Doris Burke is at GOAT status, if you ask me.
Honestly.
When I saw that she made it to the bubble, still doing her games,
yeah,
I was like, thank God, this league is saved.
Yeah, dude, she is one in a million.
Yeah. Also, shout out to her for, you know, being on 2K.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the only reason I don't turn the commentary off.
Speaking of that, we got to go to the worst ones. Fucking, what the hell's his name? I don't even know his name because we skip it every time.
Aldridge.
Dan Aldridge. Fucking, oh my God, dude. Yeah. If you play 2K and you play it at all, like, you know exactly what we're talking about. Fucking David Aldridge trying to have his intro, and you always press A to move on to the next thing. Or X.
Yeah, it never goes more than probably 0.5 seconds for that guy.
It would be like, we'll go down to David Aldridge for the report. Hi, David. Yeah. Oh, well, thank you, David.
Yeah, back to you.
No, man.
Yeah, that one was... Yeah, I feel like he might even be good at his job, but here's the problem. I just don't know if he is because I skip over it every single time. I really do. They might not even record the whole thing for the game.
Probably not.
And just because they know everyone's going to skip that shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would also say a good one is Tony Romo. Okay?
Yeah.
He does his like weird fucking psychic shit where... He'll, like, predict something is happening or he'll, like, explain a play just based on the formation. And, like, he knows what's going to happen. It's pretty nuts. Yeah, dude.
They had to actually tell him to stop doing it because he was so good at it.
Yeah.
They were like, because he would literally see a formation on the field and he would tell, he would just literally say what was going to happen on the next play.
Yeah.
And it fucking happened. And they were like, okay, dude, you need to stop doing this shit because it's getting, like, way less predictable or way more predictable if you do that.
Yeah. That's pretty nuts. I would also say someone like related to Tony Romo, John Madden. Okay, fucking GOAT. Like as a sportscaster and as like the face of video games for football, right? I was watching this documentary the other day and the leaders at Sega like went over to John Madden because they wanted to have more sports games. They didn't have really any sports games. All the football games were shit at the time. They go over, John Madden agrees to it after like they go through some shit, and literally it started because Sega wanted more sports games. They go to John Madden, they start Madden Football, I think in 93, and from there it just explodes. And now it's just called Madden. Like, it's not Madden Football, whatever. It's Madden, and everybody knows, hopefully, who John Madden is by now.
Yeah, he made arguably the biggest impact with his job.
Yeah, you that's know? True.
More best commentators. Okay, so Craig Seager, pour one out for the homie, but he always had the crazy suits going on.
Yeah, dude, fucking legend.
Yeah, that one was. I remember the first time I saw him, I was like, "Is this motherfucker serious?" Like,
yeah, I remember when KG went up to him after like an interview after a game, and Craig Seager went up to him, and then KG like didn't even answer his question. He's like, "Hey, is that suit, the tie, the pocket square, the shoes, the undershirt, everything that you're wearing, take it home and burn it. Everything. I love you to death. I love everything about you except for this fucking suit. Take everything off." He's like, "But the," and Craig's like, "But my belt's like Gucci." He's like, "Yeah, go home, fucking burn it."
I feel like he knew what he was doing with that, because it's kind of like the guy who shows up to a frat party or like class in like the most insane drip, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like someone showing up to class in backwards basketball jersey with the name in front.
Yeah,
like,
that is weird.
Those type of people, you know, and he was just the sports commentary version of that.
Yeah. We also got to give it up to Mike Emmerich, the NHL face of the NBC Sports Network. Like, I played Shell too, and he's like the main commentator there, and he's like the main commentator for like all of like hockey. Like for all the playoffs, he's just the main guy.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's been doing it forever.
Right. I mean, even with the current playoffs going on and hearing him, it just seems right. You know, when he finally is, you know, out of the game, it's gonna feel really weird. I mean, people talk about players mm-hmm. leaving a league and shit feeling different, but hey, I mean, I feel like it's the same with commentators too.
Yeah.
Worst commentators. This is going to be my last pick, but it's literally this guy, the guy who was covering the Giants game, and he said some like really homophobic shit right before like when his mic turned on and he didn't even know it was on. And then he tried apologizing later that game, and in the middle of his apology he was doing a play call.
Didn't that just happen?
It just happened.
Something Wiseman. I think he was for the Cardinals. I think it was the Cardinals Cubs game or something like that, and he said the homophobic slur, and then like Fox kicked him out because he was on for football too.
Yeah, and he fucked up his apology.
Yeah,
I've never even seen that happen.
Fucking bitch, dude. At least he didn't do a. I don't think he did a iPhone notes apology like every fucking YouTuber, influencer, fucking all those guys do that shit.
Yeah. I mean, that was such a huge botch.
Yeah, dude. I gotta give it up to the two legends at NBC football, Sunday Night Football. Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth. Al Michaels called the Miracle on Ice. You know, do you believe in miracles? Then Chris Collinsworth, you know, a lot of people don't like him, but I personally like him because he does the slide, right? Where he comes in like at the beginning of the thing, and I think that's pretty cool. And he gives like some pretty good like knowledge tidbits like during the thing. And Al Michaels is just a fucking legend too. But we also got to give it up to the hardworking sideline reporters of the NFL.
Yes.
Pam Oliver, Aaron Andrews, and Carissa Thompson.
Right. We've covered Aaron Andrews on this podcast before for having to deal with Richard Sherman at the end of that game. Because, like, how do you even prepare for that? You can't prepare for someone popping off and just, like, trying to control the situation and just act like it's all normal.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even know what to say.
Yeah. And I mean, she dealt with a lot of shit. Like, I think she had like a creeper who like took photos of her like naked without her consent and stuff and posted it online. Like he like took a photo through like a window, I think. Right.
Yeah.
Some like really fucked up shit, but she's been through a lot like with that. And she's like come out even better than ever.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that Aaron Andrews hasn't fizzled out mentally at this point is nothing short of a miracle.
Yeah, And then I got to get one more best, and then I have two more worst ones. Chris Berman. Okay, fucking legend. You know, the whoop, whoop. You know, like that shit. And then he goes, I'm pretty sure he's the one who said, and he can go all the way. I'm pretty sure he did that too.
Yeah.
So, like, he's a legend. No doubt about it. Last two worst ones. Okay, I'm Colin Coward and Booger motherfucking McFarland.
Booger McFarland's trash,
bro. God, dude, hey, whoever scores the most points is going to win the game. Remember when he said that shit?
I don't even know how he has a job, if I'm being completely honest with you.
I don't think he has a job this year. I think they actually got rid of him.
Oh, thank God. With Cowherd, it's very hit or miss with that guy.
Yeah, he has some good points, but a lot of the times it's like, dude, come on. Like the shit with Baker Mayfield that he started. Oh, man, dude, Baker hates Colin Coward. And, like, they, like, because he said that Baker wasn't going to be shit.
Yeah.
And then Baker turns out to be, like, this amazing quarterback in college. And, like, I think he's going to be okay. I think he's going to be above average in the NFL. It's just going to need more time.
Yeah, I think Baker, it's like, where the stats don't really tell the full story. I think that he's better than his stats will show. But Cowherd and Baker, look, it's hilarious because Cowherd just shits on him all the time whenever they're not in the same room. And then he actually had Baker on the show and he started like sucking up to him. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, dude, you're just a poser at that point. Like, come on, be real with the guy. You can't even like talk shit to his face.
I know. And then Baker called him out for being a poser. And he's like, dude, just say what you want to say to my face right now. Like, I'm here. Like, fucking come at me.
Yeah. And Cowherd has had some of the coldest takes I've ever heard. He said the Portland Trailblazers should have still drafted Greg Oden instead of KD. Back when that was going on, he was like, who are they going to draft, Oden or KD? He was like, you gotta pick Oden. I mean, KD's just another guy.
Yeah, Oden's the fucking biggest draft bust ever. Like, behind, like, Ryan Leaf.
Yeah, and, like, Sam Bowie and Anthony Bennett.
Yeah, oh, fuck.
I mean, with Greg Oden, look, injuries happen, you know? I think he was great when he wasn't injured, but, oh my God, Anthony Bennett, dude, so bad.
Honestly, the worst. And then they fucking traded him to the Timberwolves. Fucking piece of shit, dude.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, fuck. God damn.
I think there was one point where he had, like, more fouls than points or something. I don't know.
Probably. He's a fucking walking wall.
Yeah.
Who can't really move.
Actually, I'm going to throw in a couple more.
Okay.
Stephen A.
All right.
This is a good one for him. I'm giving him credit. Just because it'd be blasphemous to put him anywhere else. I've never seen a guy go so over the top whenever he's covering shit, getting so into it.
Yeah.
Kwame Brown.
Yeah. And he's fucking, like, he is so fucking funny. Like, the one time where he wore a cowboy hat walking in, dude.
Yeah.
That's fucking hilarious.
All right, so the other one I'm going to throw in, this is going to fall into a specific category called best/worst commentator.
Okay.
Or analyst, I should say, but I got to throw him in there anyway. Skip Bayless, because he is like the original troll.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like at some point in his career, he was like, oh my God, if I say really hot takes, people are just going to like tune in and listen.
Or stupid as shit.
Or just really stupid shit. And it's working, because every tweet he sends out is motivated by some, you know, need to be a troll so he gets more clicks and likes and all that. And the dynamic he had with Stephen A, and even the one that he has with Shannon right now, like the LeBron hater, LeBron lover dynamic, that's great. That's awesome. But he knows what he's doing. Like, he picked Shannon for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, according to Shannon, Skip does actually believe everything that he says.
That's crazy. How can he like the Cowboys that much?
Yeah. I cannot stand this motherfucker, because sometimes I like him otherwise, but I cannot stand him because he always was saying my San Antonio Spurs whenever they were having their runs. And then literally now it's my LA Clippers. Like, bro, shut the fuck up. Yeah. Like, honestly, you're just bandwagoning it.
Yeah, I hate how he does that shit.
Yeah.
That's annoying.
Yeah. and then that one time Vanderbilt won the national tournament for baseball. He's never brought up Vanderbilt baseball before. And that's his alma mater.
Okay.
And then he was like going apeshit over that because they won. And I was like, dude, you literally, that was probably the only series in baseball you ever watched.
Oh my
like,
God.
In college baseball, I'll say. But yeah. Skip Bayless, shout out for being the best and worst commentator in history.
Yeah. Fuck. That's crazy. Well, that's all the time we have for the podcast. Thank you for listening. Subscribe to our podcast on whatever platform you're listening to us on so you never miss an episode. Go follow us on all our personal social medias. Follow us on Instagram at IntentionallyFollow. I'm Jacob.
I'm Cam.
And this has been an Intentionally Follow podcast. Bye.
Take it easy, y'all.